birthday. Anyhow, let me get back to business here. You're welcome. Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker, Pat O. from Fullerton.
My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober. Grateful to be here. I want to thank you for welcoming me. Good to see Larry. Good to see some familiar faces. Thank you, Carly, for coming with me. Thank you. I think it's Joe and Larry. One of them asked me to speak, and then they don't even show up, you know. So thank you, guys. You know, if it's if the talk sucks, well, I don't think they heard me either, you know. So here we are. I prayed and asked God to speak through me, so whatever God, what God wants me to say is what I'll say, you know. And, you know, I'm super grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for ADD Squirrel. And, you know what I mean? I'm like, a lot going on here. You know, it's a lively group, you know. Super grateful to be here. I want to welcome the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous. Those that identified as being new, I want to welcome you to AA. Alcoholics Anonymous is the single most important thing in my life today, you know, and I'm willing to do whatever I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous in order for me to stay sober today, you know, and, you know, I have a really good life as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, I want to welcome the newcomer that's in the room that's not identifying as a newcomer. I want to welcome you. I know the loneliness that it feels to sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous not identifying, you know, because I would come to AA and I'd make a promise, I'm not going to drink, and I'd leave AA and I'd be drunk just like that. And I'd come to AA and I'd make that promise, I'm not going to drink, and I'd leave AA and I'm drunk just like that, you know, and, you know, I, man, the hopelessness that we understand is, I get it to a really core level, you know, and I want to welcome you, and, the visitors, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, or at least to this area, and happy birthday to those that celebrated birthdays. I could have listened to you the whole meeting, you know, I was like, just keep going, you know, so, you know, I know the old timers, though, they're like, you're 1 minute up, you know, and, you know, you can feel that, you know what I mean, and I'm over here going, yeah, keep going, you know, you're like on fire for AA, you know, and the old timers like, all right, 1 minute up. And because that's how my home group is, you know what I mean? The old timers will clap you right off the stage, you know. You're not the 10-minute speaker, you know. And, you know, so, but happy birthday, you know. And, man, I love AA. My home group's the South Coast Speakers Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on a Wednesday night, 8 o'clock in Laguna Beach. 8 o'clock in Laguna Beach at the Women's Club. Our first meeting was February 1946. And all of our old-timers have passed away, you know, guys like John Ackerlin and Tommy Whalen. And I remember walking into my home group the first week sober, and Johnny Ackerlin looked at me and he said, I love you, kid. And, man, it just, like, touched my heart so deep, you know. And, you know, I hope that I can carry the message that those guys carried to me, you know. I hope that I could be an example like they were for me. I really love all those guys that taught me how to show up to Alcoholics Anonymous. They taught me to put on a suit. They taught me how to be quiet in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous while the meeting was going on. You know, they taught me to show up early and stay late. They taught me to put my hand out to the new man in the back, the guy with his Walkman on. I'm so grateful for the iPhone, you know what I mean? Because I'm weird, awkward, poopy pants kid. Like, that's who I am naturally. Like, I show up to the party weird, awkward, poopy pants. You know what I mean? My hair's like, eh. You know, I'm like, eh. And I show up to the meeting like that, you know? And iPhone time, it's like, I'm busy, you know? And you know what I mean? Really, I'm terrified of you putting your hand out to me. I'm absolutely terrified, you know? And so I want to welcome you in the back. If you're on your Walkman, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I actually put my hand out to that young man. You know, and I'm really grateful, you know. I, my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I was 11 months old. I'm not that sick. but my mom was being sentenced to prison for 10 years or coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And she says against her better judgment, the attorney was going, you should probably go to AA, you know. And she came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was 11 months old, and I was so grateful that the meeting tonight said, if you have a kid, just supervise them. You know, AA was different back then. I don't know, because I rip-roared around Alcoholics Anonymous. you know, and I'd go to the AA meetings and I would run around. I mean, my first memory, I stole 15 packs of sugar from the coffee area and I was like sucking down sugar, you know, outside the meeting. And then I'd be like, you know, I'm zipping around. And Jim S., he would give me a dollar. He'd say, go buy some candy from the coffee bar. You know, here, buy extra, you know. And I'd go buy candy. And I just caused trouble around here. And the old timers told me, we're saving this seat right here for you, kid, you know. I had no idea. I'd get done playing and I'd sit down, you know, and well, there's my seat, you know. And they had an idea. I didn't have any idea. But I can tell you that I suffered from the spiritual malady of this disease long before I ever took my first drink. I would sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd bob my head identifying with the feelings that we talk around here. You know, my mom's a single parent, you know. Well, she's also a blackout drinker, so I'll never know who my dad is, you know. But for all I know, my dad could be the Domino's man, you know what I mean? And my mom sends me a text. Every time I speak, she says, make sure you tell them the truth, you know. So here's the most truthful thing I can say about that is that my mom didn't know she was pregnant until she was in labor. She thought she was constipated, so she called 911. Because I guess that's what you're supposed to do when you're constipated. You call 911, I guess. And the doctor's like, you need to name him. You know, and she's like, name what? You know. Those of you that don't know my mom, her name's Patty. And so she called me Patrick so she wouldn't forget my name. You know, and only an Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, maybe laugh at that joke. You know, and right? But it just made my life growing up so awkward, man. I always wanted a dad. I mean, I always wanted to learn how to play catch with my dad. I'd see you guys playing catch, and I'd wonder what it was like to sit down and have a conversation with my dad. I wanted to fish. I wanted someone had to teach me how to fish. And, you know, and growing up, I was raised with a lot of love. You know, my perception to my life is that no one loved me my entire life. I mean, the love that I feel in this room tonight is the love that I was raised with. You know, Lynn Wilder was my basketball coach when I was a kid, you know, and I had people in AA, you know, here, meet Uncle Tom, he's going to teach you how to, you know, and you know, Uncle Fred, you know, the guy in AA, it's weird, you know what I mean, look at the guy next to you, you know, that was my dad, you know, and, you know, but the men in AA loved me, the women in AA were like, he's so cute, can I have him for the weekend, and my mom would be like, sure, go ahead, you know, the women in AA would take care of me, and I met some of these women today, and they're like, oh my God, your mom let me have you, and I had 7 days sober, you know, and only in AA, but my mom would bring women home, they'd detox on her couch. I watched someone die of this disease in my house. I watched people in AA, they'd fall out of the chair and flop around and go into you know, alcohol withdrawal in the middle of the AA meeting, the speaker wouldn't even skip a beat. And the good people from AA would cart them off. I could recite the chapter 5. I could recite the 12 traditions. The end of the meeting, I was like, keep coming back, you know. And, you know, by like, if love had anything to do with this disease, I'd never taken my first drink. If knowledge had anything to do with alcoholism, I'd never taken my first drink, you know. I'm a right fielder on the baseball team. Any other right fielders here? No one's going to admit it. One guy is like, you know. You know, it's, you know, we know. It's like the loser position, you know. And, I throw the ball that way and it goes that way, you know, and like really, like I smell like poopy pants and syrup as a kid. Like I'm just awkward, I'm weird, and it's perfect for a right fielder because the ball never goes there, you know. And diagnosed with ADD, they didn't give me pellets when I was a kid because I'm like in left field wandering around. You know, the game's going on and I'm looking for the dandelion just because I want to wish for a different life, you know. And I mean, one time I was in second base. I don't know how the heck I got there. The kid cracked a line drive, and I ran back to first base, you know. And, little poopy pants in the dugout. You know, my friends are running out of the dugout. What I heard him say is, you're a failure, you're a loser, and you're no good. Right? No idea where those thoughts came from, but that was the voice that was going on in my head as a little kid. I remember looking at my mom, and she's like clapping. Oh, yeah, so proud of her kid, you know. And not proud, he's got a triple play, but it took me an hour to get out of that stupid car to go to that stupid field to play one more stupid game, and I failed once more, you know. And we're looking at my mom that day, telling myself if I only had a dad, that it never happened. And I quickly built a belief system that was going to separate me from you, and I had no idea, you know. And I was at a meeting. It was an 8 o'clock meeting on a Saturday night in Laguna Beach. It still goes on tonight. And I was at the hospital there. And now I know it was like this guy was a chronic relapser, but he stood outside the Canyon Club and he stood outside the Gong Show meeting on Tuesday nights. And he stood outside this meeting. And we'd throw little pebbles at him and he'd chase after us. And we just had fun with this guy. We didn't know he was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was just another character in AA. And I threw a little pebble at him. He went to go grab me and I kicked him in the shin and I took off. And me and my little friends that ran around Alcoholics Anonymous together ran through the hospital, and we ran through the parking structure, and we're between the third and the fourth story of this parking structure, and these kids bowled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. I didn't know what alcohol was going to do to me or for me that day, but that bottle came around to me. I remember getting that bottle. I took a big pull off that thing, and I don't know what it was like the first time you drank tequila, but I hated the taste, and I spit it out. And I mean, the week before the DARE program came to school, I had a whole arm full of red bands. A week before, I'm like, just say no. That day, that bottle got to me, and I took a pull off that thing. I spit it out, and I was overcome with fear. And the bottle went back around. I remember watching you guys drink that alcohol, and you put that alcohol down. All of a sudden, you started to smile, and all of a sudden, you started to connect. And it got to me, and I took a pull off that bottle, and I told myself, hold it down, hold it down. I held that stuff down, and what happened for me in that moment was all that fear went away. Right in that exact moment, I felt like I connected to those kids. Right in that exact moment, I felt like all of a sudden I was a part of, you know, and that's what alcohol does for me. You know, at 11 years old, I was in Dana Point. I grew up down there, and this kid handed me a joint. I didn't think, hey, you're going to AA, so don't smoke weed. I was like, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, this little elf chased me around the park, you know, and I was like, whoa, hallucinating big time, you know. And, I didn't think anything different. Weed, alcohol, anything that I put in my body connected me to you. Weird, awkward, poopy pants, connected. Solution for a guy like me. And I drank and used in a time when gangster rap was coming in. And I grew up in Mission Viejo, California. I don't think they saw a gang member till I got there, you know. And right? Because, like, I wore a size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up. I had a 5XL sweatshirt. I walked with a limp. I drank St. Ives out of a brown paper bag. I mean, I pour beer in the curb for the dead homies and everything, you know. I grew up in Mission Viejo. We didn't have any dead homies. We were getting ready for some, you know. I mean, I got a root canal on LSD. That was fun. It was 9 in the morning. I'm 140 deep at 9 in the morning. Going to get a root canal in the back of the bus where homies sit. And I was with my friend. I reached my hand in my pocket, and I pulled out 4 hits of LSD. I'm like, hey, you want to eat these? He's like, sure, you know. So we both took 2 hits of acid an hour before I was sitting in the dentist chair. The nitrous oxide went on. It was like, bow, wow, wow, you know. Oh, my God. I love the bow, wow, wows. Holy cow. We were in the grocery store the other night, and I just thought about taking a hit off that can, you know, that. Right, you know what I'm talking about? In the middle of the grocery store, just sitting there, wah, wah, you know. I haven't done it since October 23rd, 2002, but it was a thought, you know. And but like it was, oh my God, it was so intense. You know, I mean, I wanted to get more dental work done the next day, you know. And, right, like more is better. Like I don't know about like the singleness of purpose. Like you're gonna go to AA, they're gonna talk about the singleness of purpose. Don't eat LSD, you know. I didn't know anything about, hey, the old timers will get mad at you for talking about outside issues. Like, I didn't know anything like that. I was like, more is better. 16 years old, I'm blacking out. Like, my mom goes to AA, and I'm like coming out of a blackout peeing on her fish tank, you know? And my mom found a bag of weed in the house. She's like, you can't smoke weed in my house. Like, I'm an active member of AA. And like, my mom just doesn't like show up. Like, my mom sponsors a lot of women. My mom speaks all over the everywhere, you know, and I'm like coming out of a blackout peeing on her fish tank, you know, and she said, you can't smoke weed in my house. I don't hear I need to stop. I hear I need to hide it better, right? I mean, I'm not stopping. That's not an option. So I hide it better, and she doesn't find it for another month, and I come out of a blackout, and I have to ring the doorbell, and there's my mom, and she has a bag of weed in her hand, and what I heard her say is that I was kicked out. What my mom said to me that night, she said, you can stay here and be sober or go out on those streets and get loaded, but you didn't make a choice. Well, now I know once I put alcohol into this alcoholic body, I had no choice. I heard I was kicked out. I didn't hear I had a choice. I heard I was kicked out, and I walked in my bedroom at 17 years old, and I packed my backpack. And I walked by my mom that night, and I looked at her right in the eyes, and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin your life. And I watched my mom's heart break right in that moment. And that shame and that, oh, that guilt and that arrogance, oh, I just, rah, F you, I hate you, screw you. And I left that night, and I'd be homeless from the age of 17 till I got sober at 27 years old. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is down there, talks about selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our trouble. Because I didn't call my mom for a year and a half. The first call she got was that I was bleeding out and I needed to go to the hospital. And my mom was so scared, and I was like, Mom, I need money, you know? And my mom's like, where are you at? I said, I'm in San Francisco. And she said, I don't know how I'm going to give you any money. I'm in Orange County. And I said, she said, I'll send the hospital a check. I said, oh, no, Mom, they need cash. You know what's up? Well, yeah. She's like, well, how am I going to give you cash? I was like, well, there's this thing down the street called Western Union, and you can wire me $150. And so she ran down to the liquor store, and she wired me another $150. And a week later, I called her back. I got another accident. And she said, I'll go down to that Western Union, and I'll wire you another $150. And a week later, I called again. I got another accident. And then that one stopped working, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh, Mom, I'm going to get sober. I'm going to get a job. I need clothes. So she went and wired me $150. And she'd gone to Al-Anon. You know, I don't know if your loved one goes to Al-Anon, but the gig's up, really, you know, because the money stops coming. And she would say things like, just go to AA, and I'd hang up on her, and I'd call her back collect, and she'd hang up on me, and I'd say, Mom, if you wouldn't have kicked me out of the house, I wouldn't be in this situation. And I'd hit that guilt button, and she'd go wire me the money, and I'd say things like, if I only had a dad, I wouldn't be in this situation. And I'd hit that guilt button, and she'd wire me the money. And, you know, I had gone to treatment. I don't know if there's any treatment centers here. I don't really have an issue about treatment. It's none of my business, but I went to Betty Ford, so it's kind of hard to have a problem with treatment. I mean, it was like prime rib sundae. You know, they had like soft serve ice cream machine, soda machine. I mean, they did your laundry for you, for heaven's sake, you know, and they made your bed. And, well, I guess I had one problem with Betty Ford. I wasn't allowed to fraternize. I don't know how that impacts you, but I called my mom. I'm like, I need to go to a different treatment center. This is going to be horrible, you know, and I had to ask what fraternizing meant. They told me I couldn't talk to the girls, and I'm a rule follower. Well, I'm not really a rule follower. I want you to like me. So I'll follow your rules so that you know that I'm a good person, right? So I was in the infirmary getting meds, and all of a sudden I looked in the back of the infirmary, and she came walking in, and we caught eyes, and I was like, oh, the music was playing, and all of a sudden we were married, we had kids, we had a little white, little yellow house, a white fence, I don't know, whatever, you know, like the perfect family. And I knew she loved me as much as I loved her, so I wrote her a note, you know, and and the guys walk around the lake this way and the girls walk around the lake this way, and I gave her a note, and at dinner time she gave me a note, and the next morning I gave her a note, and 28 days later we fell in love, you know, and it's really important for me to tell you how my love story went, because I could recite chapter 5, I could recite the 12 traditions. My counselor, Mark, called me in his office. He wanted me to do a first step. I looked at Mark, I said, Mark, I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, sir, and my life's unmanageable. And he's like, you're getting it quick, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I know, I'm doing a good job, and I got the book studies going on, you know, and you know, I got all my little friends in my little dorm. Like, you guys want to do a book study, you know? Because I'm, like, in love, dude. Like, recovery's awesome. I got the pom-poms out. I'm like, recovery's great, you know? And I gave her a note in the morning. I went to dinner, put my best shirt on to get my note from her, and she didn't give me a note. And I don't know how you react when you don't feel loved, but I'm, like, suicidal. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm going to kill myself. This is horrible, you know? My friends are like, what about the book study? I'm like, screw the book study. I'm, you know. And the next morning, she gave me a note, and it was like getting hugged by God. I mean, it's like, oh. You know, I mean, I was like, oh, recovery's great. You want to do that book study, guys? You know, and Mark called me in his office. He's like, you got to do a second step. He's like, you got to do a second step, Pat. And I looked at Mark in the eyes. I said, Mark, I've said, I come to believe there's a power greater than myself that's going to restore me to sanity. And I truly, truly, truly believed it was God. I had no idea it was that note. The next week, he called me in his office. He's like, you're doing such a good job, Pat. I'm like, I know. He said, you're doing so good. You got to do a 9-month program after this. So I wrote my girlfriend a note, and was like, I gotta do a 9-month program. And she wrote me a note back and she's like, I gotta do a 9-month program too. Will we have the same sobriety date? I gotta do a 9-month program. She's gotta do a this is that God's will that Mark's talking about. I mean, the stars are aligning, the planets are lining up, like, get your crystals out, here we go, you know? And I ran to Mark's office. I said, Mark, you won't believe it. I said, this is how God's working in my life. And I didn't tell him about the girl, but I was just telling him it was all aligning. And I said, Mark, I said, I'm making a decision to turn my will and life over to the power of her as I understand God, you know? And this is my story in retrospect, so I can make it funny. But the reality was that I truly believed it was God, and I truly believed that my life was aligned the way God wanted it for me to be. And I got out of treatment, and I wasn't an alcoholic, I was a heroin addict. So I ordered a drink on the plane. Duh, alcohol's not my problem. And I got off the plane, and 12 or 13 Heinekens later, I got off the plane, and the last year and a half of my drinking and using was downtown L.A. on Skid Row. And as a straight man, I'd walk into a gay bar and I'd flirt with enough men to get enough alcohol in my body and hope I'd make it out before I blacked out. And if you're laughing, you're identifying, I've learned around here. I'd come to in bed with a dude I had no clue who he was, knowing what I did the night before. I'd come to with shame and guilt and remorse. When they talked about incomprehensible demoralization, I knew it to the core of my soul when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I would come to in that situation, and my first thought would be to go to the liquor store to get a pint of tequila. And I'd get that pint of tequila, and I'd put that thing back, and boom, something would kick off inside of me, and I'd be on. And I would come to the next morning in the same situation, shame, guilt, remorse, pint of tequila, off. And when I came to on October 23rd, 2002, I was in a motel. I was in and out of the Salvation Army. I couldn't get sober. I was on the stairs for 3 days because I had to pee clean. And the third day, restless, irritable, and discontent just turns into anger for me. You take alcohol out of this alcoholic body and I get angry. And on the third day, that anger was going to explode. And I had a bright idea. And I put that pint of tequila back, and I came to on October 23rd, 2002, in bed with a dude I had no clue who he was, but knew what I did the night before. Filled with those same emotions of shame, guilt, remorse, fear, and loneliness. But what had happened different that day was I had an intuitive thought that stepped right in between me and that first drink. And that intuitive thought said, call your mom and ask for help. And I called my mom, I said, Mom, I need help. And my mom said, I can't help you anymore. She says, just stay right where you are. Someone from Alcoholics Anonymous will come and get you. She said, if I come and get you, I'm going to end up killing you. And she hung up on me. And these two goofy dudes from AA came. This guy came in. I was 98 pounds when I got sober. I hadn't showered in 6 months. I was up for 21 days. I was an absolute wackadoodle. And this guy came in. He goes, my name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic. And my whole body is like vibrating, you know. This guy was on a walker. He's like, my name's John. I have 90 days, you know. And I'm like, good for you, dude, you know. I didn't believe in God until I had 10 and a half years sober, but I can tell you the grace of God entered my life that day. That guy Jack said, come with me, kid. I got off that bed, and I followed that guy out of that motel. I got downstairs. He said, if you need to throw up on the floor, kid. It's a 12-step van. Don't worry about it. The guy told me his story. He talked about when he took a drink, what happened to him. He ended up in a hospital. More important than that, he talked about the thinking that preceded his first drink. Because I would come to AA as a drug addict, speed addict, crack addict, heroin addict, and alcohol is never my problem. I pick up a drink and I'm back in jail. And I come to AA and you guys wouldn't accept the addict. There might be another fellowship for you. Dying of alcoholism. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, feeling the judgment from people in AA. Because I didn't know how to identify around here. And I'd go out there and I'd die time and time again. And I'm so grateful for the responsibility statement that around here that says when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. There's no judgment in that responsibility statement. It's my responsibility as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to put my hand out to the new man and read that big book from the blank page to page 43 and identify my alcoholism in hopes that his alcoholism wakes up. And if he's not an alcoholic, that it's still my responsibility to take him to a fellowship and put his hand in someone else's hand that can help that man. And that day, Jack told me his story, and what happened for me was I became an alcoholic from a man telling me his story. Day one. Day two, he said, can you come to believe in God? I said, absolutely not, Jack. He said, can you come to believe that AA's worked for me? I said, absolutely. The guy had a Porsche, for heaven's sakes. I was like, damn, AA's working good for you, bud. He said, can you make a decision to do what I tell you to do? I made a decision to do what Jack told me to do. He said, good, I'm going to be your sponsor. And he said, I'm going to give you two directions. I want you to read the big book, and I want you to take a shower. And I thought to myself, how do you know I hadn't taken a shower, you know? I read the big book, stockbroker, wah, 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 wah. Ticket tapes, I don't understand any of that stuff. I went upstairs to take a shower. I fell on the floor, and I started to cry. Bawling, crying. And that guy Jack came in. He got on his knee. He put his hand on my shoulder. He said, it's going to be all right, kid. He said, can you stand up? And I stood up. He said, can you take off your shirt? I took off my shirt. He said, just take one step into that shower. I took one step into that shower. He said, take another step. I took another step in. I took another step in. I was under the water, and I was just bawling hysterically. That guy Jack took a washcloth. He took some soap, and the guy scrubbed my back. The love that I feel in this room tonight is the love that I was given with on day one when I was at Charlie Street that day with that guy. I don't believe in God most days, guys. I really don't. But I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I look into the eyes of men and women that should be dead. I look into the eyes of men and women that should be locked up for a very long time. And when I look at you, I look right into the eyes of God. And I come here and I get to see that Alcoholics Anonymous works for you, that maybe Alcoholics Anonymous will work for me too, you know. And I have a love affair for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm willing to do whatever I have to do today in order for me to stay sober and have a good life that I have today. I only have a couple minutes, and this time just flew by really quick. I thought I had 45. It was less than that. It was less than that.
You have 10 minutes left.
Oh, you guys are messing me up, man. Man, I'm rolling, man. It must be God's will. Man, oh, man. All right, my name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be here. And, oh, my gosh. Man, that really jacked me up, man. I'm going to go 4 days sober. Jack said, you got to go to the Salvation Army program. He said, you got to go to sober living. I'm like, but I have to go to the Salvation Army. He goes, why do you have to go to the Salvation Army? I said, well, because I have a warrant. Oh, I shouldn't have told him that. You know what I mean? Because he's like, we're going to go to court tomorrow. And I'm like, no, dude, no. Let's wait 90 days, you know what I mean? The last time I saw the judge, he told me if he saw me again, he's going to sentence me to 3.5 years in prison. Like, can we wait 90 days, you know, get some attaboys, get some letters from people in AA doing a great job? He said, no, it's going to be all right. We're going to go tomorrow, kid. Oh. He showed up the next day with a suit a lot bigger than the one I'm wearing. I look like I was swimming in the thing. We go to see the judge down in Laguna Niguel, and I get up there, and the judge says, Mr. Ochoa. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. He said, I told you last time you were in my courtroom, I was going to sentence you to 3.5 years in prison. I said, yes, sir, he did. He closed my folder. He said, I'm not lying. He said, guard, come cuff this kid up and take him away. And I went downstairs, and I started to say to myself, how'd you trust that man? You never trusted men your entire life. You put your trust in this guy, and this guy failed you. One more man in your life has failed you. And I got on my knees, and I prayed to a God I didn't believe in. Because I remember Jack telling me from the very day, first day, he said, get on your knees and pray. I said, I don't believe in God. He said, I don't care if you believe or not. Just get on your knees and pray anyways. Ask God for help you stay sober. And at night, thank God for keeping you sober. And I started doing that. And I got on my knees. I prayed to a God I didn't believe in because Jack told me to. And God didn't work for me then. I wasn't like, oh, God. But I took the action. 4:30 in the afternoon, I'm getting cuffed up next to the guy next to me to get on the bus to go to prison. And I heard my last name called. And the guard said, I don't know what's going on, but the judge has called you for your name, and the judge wants to see you one more time. Now, I go up to the courtroom, and the judge says, Mr. Ochoa, come on up. I stand there. He said, there's a member of AA who's been sitting here all day fighting for you to get out. And he pointed over to my sponsor, Jack, who had been sitting in that courtroom all day. And Jack had called the Salvation Army, and they said, we got a bed available for him. It was a Tuesday night at 4:30. I pulled in there at 6. The Salvation and Anaheim only let you in Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning. You got to be there at 6 in the morning to stand in line. And see, God was working in my life long before I could see God. But I walked in that Salvation Army program, and this guy put out his hand. He said, my name's Tim. I said, I'm Pat. And I looked at him. It was a guy I used to get loaded with. And Tim was the guy that answered the phone when my sponsor Jack called. And Tim had gotten sober and became a drug and alcohol counselor and heard my first and last name, and he made sure there was a bed for me. Every Sunday, Jack would come see me. I was making amends at 90 days. I decided to leave the Salvation Army program, totally forget the gift that God gave me. And I went to go see the judge, and he said, you know, I'm glad Alcoholics Anonymous is working for you. We as the court aren't going to bust you. But probation wants to give you a violation, you're going to go do 100 days in jail. At 90 days sober, I went to jail. I was on my 9th step already. I made amends to my mom, I made amends to my family, I made amends to all these people. And I got cuffed up that day to go into jail, and it was the most free I'd ever felt in my entire life. I knew going locked up, going to jail, the most free I've ever felt, going in there knowing I was never going to have to go to jail again. And I walked into jail, and I got a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was so excited when I'd hear that panel, H&I is coming. And I'd get my jumpsuit, and I'd just get it cleaned as I could to show up to see the people from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd show up, and I'd try to go to church, and I got a big book, and I'm studying it. And these guys, are you sure that's the right one? And everybody's like, here, you want some Pruno? Here, you want some weed? Here, you want some heroin? No thanks, no thanks, no thanks. I'm bobbing, I'm weaving. And this guy looks at me and said, what are you, a rat or something? And I sat these 7 guys down and I told them my story, you know. I mean, they had nowhere to go. They had to listen, you know. And I got done. The guy's like, you're right. We don't want to give you any, you know. And and I went back to my bunk, and I started to study the big book. And this kid came up to me and said, Pat, I'm looking at 10 years in prison. I don't know what to do. I was 100 days sober, and I shared my experience with this guy. I said, man, I went to go see the judge. I told him I was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and he released me to the Salvation Army. I said, maybe he'll release you. The next day, that kid went to the Salvation Army. He came back, and he gave me a big hug in front of like 6 dudes. I'm like, whoa, this is weird, you know. And the guy was crying. He said, the judge is going to release me to the Salvation Army. He said, man, I'm getting loaded in this institution every day. I don't know how to stay sober. And I did what my sponsor had done for me. I got the big book, and I read word for word and line for line out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him my story as it related to the physical allergy, to the mental obsession of this disease. And that guy said, hey, you know what, I think I'm alcoholic. And we did a second step, and I asked him if he was willing to do a third step in that institution. He was, but we did it at like 3 in the morning when no one was looking, you know. And he got released. He went to the Salvation Army. And a week later, I got released. And I went every Sunday like my sponsor had done for me. That guy got loaded. And what happened for me on the inside was that I came to find out that one alcoholic working with another alcoholic allowed me to stay sober one day at a time in that institution. You know. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm willing to do whatever I have to do. I have a 10-year-old kid. He's my favorite human being on the entire planet. I didn't know that I can love on the level that I love that kid. had to make amends to him because I were going on a trip and restless, irritable, and discontent. He wanted to know what this was. He wanted to know what that is. This is. That's a tractor. That's a water tower. That's this. That's that. An hour in, you're like, man, I told you an hour ago what that was. 6 hours in, I'm like this. I'm ignoring him. He's ignoring me. We get into camp. I have to build a tent. He wants to ask me one more damn question. I grab my kid. I said, just go to bed. And I built the tent around him. And I got on my knees and I prayed to a God I didn't believe in one more time. And I started to review my day and I learned that I came to understand that I treated my kid out of disrespect and I treated him out of anger. And what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is we don't treat people that way. And the next morning I woke up and I looked at him. I said, Eden, if you guys like acronyms, his name's Eden Gannon Ochoa. And only an alcoholic would do that to their kid, you know. And I said, Eden, I said, I owe you an amends. And I said, we want to go on a walk with your dad? He said, I'd like to go on a walk with you, Dad. We went on a walk. I got on my knees. I looked at my kid right in the eye, eye to eye. I'm not better than him. I'm no less than him, eye to eye. I looked at my kid in the eye, and I said, you know, I treated you yesterday in a way of anger, and I treated you out of disrespect. And I don't choose to treat anybody that way today, and I just want you to know that I'm sorry to the bottom of my heart. And if there's anything I can do to make this situation right, I just please let me know. And my kid looked at me and he said, you know, Dad, he said, everybody makes mistakes, you know. He said, I love you no matter what, Dad. I wanted to ask that kid to be my sponsor, you know. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, my message tonight is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking. If you're new, my message tonight is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a process of growing up. It's my prayer every night that if you're new, that you find a sponsor that cares more about your life than the way you feel. My name is Pat, I'm an alcoholic, and I love you all. Thank you.